or whatever. If I wanted meat that wasn't chicken or goat or tilapia, it had to come from the sequencer, which in my case would be transforming chicken to duck. What I'd finally be working with would be cubes of something that would look like boneless, raw duck meat and would have the proper proportion of fat to protein, with biopolymers and lipid chemistry faithfully reproduced. But first I had to kill a duck and pull its guts out and hack it up. That was not something we had covered at the Escuela Bellart in Barcelona. We just went across the street and bought a duck, headless, featherless, already dressed. I checked my wrist. 3 hours to go. Meet me here for the docking? Yeah. Everybody's taking off except Howard. If you have time, you might go home and pick up a blanket. Get here early enough to get us a space. Okay. The duck better not take that long. Good hunting. My hero, she added in a squeaky falsetto. Yeah, me kill vicious bird. I walked away feeling totally atavistic. All this barnyard stuff, breeding and killing. I went back home and picked up both a blanket and a pillowcase, approximately duck-sized, wishing I had a gun or even a rock to throw at the damn thing. Note to future starship builders, pack a few rocks. No trouble finding detailed instructions for preparing the duck, reproduced from a 1918 Boston cooking school book. But it assumed the creature was already dead by the time you started sawing away at it. Most people I talked to thought you were either supposed to shoot it or chop its head off. I could just see taking a cleaver down to the pond and attacking a defenseless quacker, perhaps losing a finger in the process. Bruce and I remembered seeing a couple of old movies where people had killed chickens for cooking by breaking their necks. Just grab it underneath the head and give it a yank. So we'd try that. No clients scheduled today. I called him and he said he'd meet me at the pond. We did finally succeed in producing a dead bird, but it was not an unqualified success. Ducks aren't very smart, but they obviously had us figured out. Two people can't corner one duck. Multiply that principle by about 20, and you have a constantly milling flock, complaining bitterly, never coming within an arm's length of either human. They all eventually wound up in the water. They swam to the other side of the pond. When I rushed over there, they paddled out to the middle. By this time, we had gathered a small crowd of spectators. I explained what we were trying to do. We had to go in after them. I got three hesitant volunteers, two women and a man. We stripped down and charged into the water after the little bastards. It was only a little more than a meter of water at its deepest, but it was, after all, their element. Paddling and flapping, they could go just a little faster than we could. Four more people saw what was happening and joined the fray. I wanted a fairly young male duck, eggs being the only useful byproduct of the creature's existence, and pointed out a couple of targets based on coloration and size. The company assembled did manage to surround one of them, and by forming an unkempt semicircle, squishing through the mud, aimed him toward me and my waiting pillowcase. They closed in, and just as he started to fly away, I made a leap and grabbed him by the neck. He didn't surrender, and he didn't die as handily as the chickens in the movies. Those cute webbed feet have impressive claws, and once I had him in a stranglehold, they were his basic defense, slashing away at my chest and forearm. Another crowd had gathered at the commotion, ignorant of the culinary goal of the exercise, and a couple were volubly wondering why we didn't leave the poor things alone. I guess they thought it was just something we were doing for the hell of it, waiting for the fuel tank docking. Why don't we just go get our chests slashed up by a filthy bird? Sounds like a good way to pass the time. It was a noisy and somewhat bloody encounter, but I finally managed to yank on the thing's neck and heard a sharp crack. I retrieved the pillowcase, again floating in the muddy water, and stuffed him in. I'm a literary person, and should know that nature always provides a coda for man's hubris. In this case, while I was thanking everybody for diving in, pillowcase between my feet on the shore with one pant leg on, the duck decided to come back to life. It lurched out of its container and tried pathetically to run away. It was fast but uncoordinated, falling down 3 times before Bruce grabbed its head and finished it off, twisting 360 degrees. I later found out that ducks are more substantial than chickens. They're all dark meat because they get exercise, flapping around. Chickens sit there and grow white meat, pondering eternal verities. I assumed they were easier to kill, too, or at least less likely to enter into close combat. I called the woman who's in charge of killing chickens downstairs, which I might have done earlier, and she said they just use a jolt of electricity, then behead them for bleeding. Next time, she said, I should just bring the duck down and zap him. Sure, I'll try to talk one into it. Bruce went back to the time machine office, leaving me with the sacred, if disgusting, responsibility of turning a bird corpse into something people would willingly eat. The 1918 book didn't say anything about feathers other than suggesting an alcohol flame to singe off the pin feathers. I'd written my mother, asking whether her generation had any handed-down lore. She said that, like her mother and grandmother before her, she assumed that chickens were born naked and wrapped in plastic. The chicken woman said they prepared to pluck the bird by scalding it for 2 minutes with water at 64 degrees centigrade, but she thought a duck might need a hotter and longer scald. Not boiling, she said, which I had figured out. I didn't want duck soup. I called the kitchen and ordered a large pot of 70-degree water. It was still heating when I got there. My 3 assistants gathered around to watch me whack the thing's head off with a cleaver. It took 3 anesthetic whacks. I tied a string to its foot and suspended it over a pot to catch the blood. After a minute, the trickle slowed to a drip, and when the water was hot enough, I dropped the body in. We watched it for 90 seconds, then fished it out. The feathers did come off, though not easily or cleanly. Carl used a little finishing torch to singe the pin feathers. Following directions, I removed the wings and legs, then separated the breast and ribs from the back. Then I hesitated. It looked a little too much like Alex, I guess, open for display. Carl excused himself, and then so did Sandra. Zack stared in fascination. The book advised, before removing entrails, gizzard, heart, liver, lungs, kidneys, crop, and windpipe, observe their position, that the anatomy of the bird might be understood. I did that, actually, and it allowed me to be more objective about the dissection. I concentrated on the inane fact that Alex hadn't had a gizzard or a crop. I worked carefully with a small, sharp knife, separating the edible parts, which Zack bagged and labeled. I might want them to make me a large mass of liver for a pâté. I was careful to separate the gallbladder and cut away a part of the liver's surface nearby that looked greenish. The neck and wings I put into a small pot to simmer into stock, which I'd also send along for analysis and reproduction. I was sure they'd send back a powder with instructions for reconstitution, which would taste as much like a duck as our powdered chicken stock tasted like chicken. Zack took the stuff up to the food lab while I computed the amounts I'd need. Not everybody would like the liver pâté, but I wanted to try it. Say 200 servings, about 1 ounce each, 6 kilograms. The duck recipe called for a 5-pound duck to serve 4 people. I guess that would be about 1 pound of actual duck meat, minus guts and feathers, feet and head, so call it 100 kilos for 800 people. It would be a busy couple of days. Tonight would be easy, Spanish tortilla omelets, and there were only 60 reservations so far. A lot of people were involved in the docking or watching it at dinner time. It was Sandra's hour to choose the music, so I put up with her weepy, romantic ballads, some of them mercifully in Welsh. I shed a tear myself, though I was chopping onions at the time. Once the eggs and veggies were all prepared and in coolers, I let them go till 17:30. I made sure all the herbs and spices were in place, all 10 frying pans ready. Put the potatoes in the oven and programmed it to have them ready at 17:45. Then I gathered up the blanket and a bottle of wine and went out to claim our place in the park, if we had one. The duck had taken longer than I'd planned. I had my reader set up with a Spanish dictionary and the classic Sabor de España to read while I was waiting, but Kate was already there. She had her light box and was sketching out a linear abstract, the Mondrian-esque thing she'd been doing lately. She gestured at the screen, which they'd unrolled to its full 10 meters. They just gave the 10-minute warning. Manus and its fuel tank were like tiny models on the screen, lit up by sparkles of working lights, only a little brighter than the background stars. While I watched, the picture zoomed in closer, and the new fuel tank was just visible as a dark shape blocking out starlight. With the close-up, green lights came on in an oval and a half-oval, outlining the top and bottom of the tank. So far so good? No news is good news, I suppose. No one said anything. The picture's point of view changed abruptly to two space-suited figures who were tethered to Manus, holding wands that must have been the spot-welding tools. There would be hundreds of internal connections between the ship and its replacement fuel tank engine, but first there was this crude physical mating. Crude only in the metaphorical sense, not physical inexactness. The 5-kilometer machine has to match the stern end of Manus to within a few microns. It's all done automatically with optics, the fuel tank at first stationary relative to the ship, which uses little blips on its steering jets to make interference fringes line up precisely before easing into place. The workers would then spot weld the juncture along the circumference every 100 meters or so. During all this time, the people in the ship are weightless, the living area having spun down for the transition. Not such a big deal for Manus, but it was going to be a major headache for the rest of us, living in actual habitats. All of our standing bodies of water have to be contained by plastic film. We also have livestock to keep track of, or at least endure. The goats were going to be tranquilized for the duration, and the chickens locked up in their coop. What about the damned ducks? Just let them flap around, I guess. She touched my collar. Is that duck blood? Guess so. I couldn't see it without a mirror. There a lot of it? Just a spot. She licked her thumb and rubbed at it. Oh, that helped. Sorry. Apron didn't come up that far. What, you were hacking away at it with a cleaver? Believe me, that was the fun part, after we got the insides sorted out. Do we get some? Yeah, I'm cooking the remainder up tonight, the parts that didn't go upstairs. We'll get a couple of bites each, along with the kitchen staff. About a half recipe. Half a duck is better than none. We ought to slaughter the whole flock, I said. They really were a filthy nuisance. Once we have the formula, we can make chicken duck any time we want. So much for ecodiversity? We laughed together. There were people who were superstitious about that. Once you had the genome map, of course, you didn't need actual fucking ducks to create poultry. Life around the pond would be a lot simpler and cleaner. She took the stopper out of the wine bottle and raised it in toast. To duck burgers. We each took a sip of it. There was a chime and the screen started talking. It switched to a close-up of one of the attitude jets, which emitted a wisp of vapor. It was the final correction. There was a long crunching sound, the two behemoths coming together, which I suppose would be loud inside of Manus. For us to hear it, of course, was drama trumping physics. The welders started working their way around the ship's circumference, stopping at marks to touch their wands to the surface for a momentary bright flare. So you're going over there?
Be there at 1700, she said. Leave me enough for a sandwich?
Sure. Why did they decide they need you?
They didn't. It's Brandon's idea. Redundancy as usual. Place is going to be really overpopulated.